Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by my father, Dr. Sky Keith, and by Dr. Adam Francisco. We continue to do our Why You Should series throughout this year, and today we will be doing a little bit of social commentary, mixing it up. We're going to do Why You Should Do Hard Things, and before you go, no, not the Thinking Fellows too, and turn this off.
Welcome to the Jordan Peterson Show.
Yeah, we will cover the fact that you could probably listen to any podcast in the world right now and hear this advice. So we will discuss that a little bit and maybe hopefully be able to hold your interest. The Thinking Fellows is brought to you by the 1517 Podcast Network of shows. You can go to 1517.org/podcasts to see all 18 shows that we produce and host there. You can find all of our shows on your favorite podcasting app. So if you're subscribed to The Thinking Fellows in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Podcast Addict, or any of the number of popular podcasting apps out there, you can find our other shows there as well. You might give listen to some of our most popular shows, like 30 Minutes in the New Testament and 40 Minutes in the Old Testament, which can also be found on the YouVersion Bible app, which is generically just known as the Bible app. It's the one that pops up in all the app stores if you just type in the Bible. So you can look for those two shows there as well as on your favorite podcasting apps. All right, guys, why you should do hard things. Now, as we've actually, just so people can know, we've talked about this particular topic since I sort of outlined possibilities for the Why You Should series. You know, 6 months ago, we started talking about this.
I don't know. I feel like we've been doing Why You Should for a while. So 6 months sounds about right.
Yeah. And this was one of the first ones I had an idea for. But it's a hard one to do because we try, even though this is Why You Should, we've been trying not to, you know, literally like give people orders and tell people what to do. It's been more an attempt to explore interesting topics and make a case for the study or practice of those particular topics. The other one that we got, you know, sort of close to what you would call like just cultural commentary was our Why You Should Have Children. But we brought up a lot of theology in that as well. And so we're going to have to attempt to do some theology with this one today as well without, I don't know, making a case for works righteousness or something like that.
Work really hard at your own righteousness.
Yeah. So we'll have to do that. But if you search this, if you just kind of like try to get some reasons for why you should do hard things, you will come across very common lists of 10 things, including things like you said, you'll find Jordan Peterson or maybe Adam, is it like Jocko who does like sort of this, has this kind of mantra about doing difficult things?
Yeah, but he's not ideological about it. He's more, at least, it's been a long time since I've listened to his podcast, but it was more going through books, you know, military history and so on. But then he'd have people on who had been through rough times, but it's not, he's not pushing some, I mean, until you get up at 4:30 a.m.
Well, you know, you should get up. I've always wondered, like,
because it's before the enemy gets up, bro.
Oh, okay. It's all military? Who's the enemy?
Get up early because your kids or stuff gets moving around 6:30 or whatever it is, 7, whatever. Yeah. That way you have 2 hours to work out, to get your own stuff sorted so that you can, and ultimately, and he's not going to put it this way, but you know, you get up before everybody so that when they're all up and moving, you've got your stuff done so you can help them. See, so it's, in a way, it's kind of a serving your neighbor.
I agree with that. I recently told somebody I know who's training for a very long mountain bike race, who's trying to fit these long training rides in, you know, he'll like get on the bike at like 3 p.m. He may or may not have three kids. Get on the bike at 3 p.m. and try to go out for like 4 hours. And I was like, dude, if you're going to do this, you got to.
At 2 p.m. yesterday.
You got to be up at 5 a.m. and probably on the bike by 5:30 so that you can knock this out so that you can help your wife with the house and the kids, you know?
Yeah. You did.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, that's interesting, Adam, because I found a list on the internet of why you should do hard things. And what I noticed about the list is that it was basically a bunch of kind of meaningless platitudes about why you should do it, which, you know, kind of non-measurable things. So, like, number one reason, this was across a couple lists, you're going to grow as a person. You're going to grow as an individual. Now, there might be some truth to that, but I think you'd have to...
And there is.
You'd have to kind of define what growth is and the why. Like, why would you care to, quote, grow as a person?
But don't you have to define doing hard things?
You do. You do. Because I was going to ask this at the beginning. I've done... you also don't want to talk about yourself too much, but I've done things I would consider hard on a spectrum of, and I mean, you guys have too, on a spectrum of things, right? I've done things which, quote, academically or at school, which I would say are difficult. Then I've done physical things, which are difficult. I've done things for various employment, which are hard. So is a hard thing subjective? Is it different for everybody? Is like, you know, some people have natural talent physically, but maybe it's hard for them to finish a whole book or something like that. So is reading a book a hard thing versus going to the gym for certain people? Is this subjective? How do we deal with that part of it?
That's an interesting question.
That's deep,
I think.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, not deep.
Did
but,
I stump you guys?
Interesting.
No, I think that hard thing, you know, quote unquote, doing hard things is subjective to some degree. And I think there's a difference between doing hard things and kind of keeping your stuff in a pile, especially when you have obligations to other people. I mean, I've never listened to Jocko, but I actually, you know, we're obviously talking completely left-hand stuff here. Just I'll throw that out there right now. This is sort of in the realm of civil society is what we're talking about. I like the Adam's explanation of why would you do something like that? Because I've always wondered, you know, what's the big deal about waking up at 4:30? Why 4:30 instead of 5? Why or 5:30 or whatever? But I like the idea that, you know, stuff in a active household of parents and children starts moving 6:30 or 7, and that gives you 2 hours to work out, drink your coffee, get three S's done in the bathroom and be ready, for, you know, life as your household starts opening their eyes, because that's other focus. That's even sort of, if you're a husband and a father, that's very vocational. And would that be a hard thing to do every day? Yeah. Because one of the hardest things you can ever do is keep a consistent schedule. I mean, that's a difficult thing to do in general, especially if that difficult schedule is up to you and not being imposed on you by somebody else. Like I don't necessarily think if your workday starts at 8 a.m. Monday through Friday and ends at 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, it's a hard thing to get to work by 8 a.m. every day. But if you're imposing this thing on yourself just for the sake of helping other people and being available to help other people in your house, that's a motivationally, that's a difficult thing to do. But other than that, it probably is hard for some people to finish a book. You know, it's definitely hard. Having a family that you take care of is hard. To very
I know
degrees.
People who, for whom it's hard to get up before 10 a.m. You know, and these are adults with kids.
That's weird to me.
I was going to say, the 4:30 thing, this is tongue-in-cheek, everybody, is really just that every Gen Xer I know, and I think Jocko's probably a Gen Xer by age, has a sleeping disorder. And, like, you all are up by accident. I actually don't think you set alarms and stuff. None of you sleep. Adam probably doesn't sleep. You don't sleep. Other Gen X friends I have, you guys just don't sleep. So you guys created a philosophy of waking up early to help people to justify your sleeping disorder.
I sleep. I'm trying
me
to
think
get a solid
you protest
8 hours.
Too much, Caleb. Yeah. I think you're protesting too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're giving us a little window into your
my
your
sleep
weakness.
Schedule. It's not 10 a.m.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's more like 7.
Yeah, it's about 7. Yeah.
7's all right.
It's not a hard thing to wake up at 7, though.
that's true.
So,
you know what's hard is if you want to wake up at 4:30, so you plan, you order your life such that you'll get whatever 7 to 8 hours.
Oh, you go to bed early.
And then there's kids up at 2:30.
Mm. Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Well, I don't know that it's hard. It just stinks.
But you've re-entered, you know, a former stage of life here, though.
Yeah.
You know, where
It's not hard. It's just stupid.
That's why it's hard, though. That's why I said, you know, keeping a consistent schedule that you're kind of imposing on yourself, especially if it's for the sake of other people, is difficult because in other various stages of life, it's difficult. If you have a new baby and for whatever reason that baby's not sleeping at night, getting up at 4:30, you know, if the baby's asleep and you could sleep another 2 hours and be better when it does wake up, might be the right call. It's just you've got to measure these things out. I guess for me, for this to not get too just weirdly arrogant, I think the better questions beyond what is a hard thing is why, you know, why should you do hard things? Why is it important? And when does it go wrong? Because
they can be selfish.
Well, I think it can go very wrong when it becomes a thing unto itself. So the motivating factor for doing hard things is so that you can say you've done hard things. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you start bragging about those hard things. I don't know this for a fact, but I've been told like some of these extreme Jocko folks will like post a picture of their watch every morning at 4:30 a.m. You know?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's... you know, that seems to me, I could be wrong here, like you're no longer doing that for the purposes that you outlined as Jocko would describe it. You're now doing that for some social cred.
It's called, do you know the name Douglas Murray? He wrote The Strange Death of Europe, and I think most recently was on The War on the West or something. Mm. He's like a political commentator, I guess. He talks about this sort of thing. As he calls it, look at me-ism.
Yeah.
You know, this it's part of this narcissistic culture.
And we all do it to some degree, sure. Right? Oh, sure. I mean, the fact, social media platforms would not exist if we didn't all feel the desire to do this to some degree. Even if I post a picture of me out camping, you know, I'm saying something. Ha ha, I'm camping, you're not. whatever. Yeah. But, there's something to it, though, when that is the consistent part of why you're getting up at 4:30, too, is for the sake of that picture or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I think to be generous, too, though, there are some people who are just doing it because it's fun.
Right.
See, and that's, I always overlook that because I don't
have fun.
I'm not a fun
guy. Yeah, because
he has fun.
These Gen Xers your son was talking about.
One of the first times I saw, like, this concept in particular come up in just public discourse is there's a, I don't know if it was on his podcast or an interview, but there's a segment of Jordan Peterson, who we already sort of joked about at the beginning, talking about watching skateboarders like fail over and over.
Well, that's
and
from
over.
His book, 12 Rules.
He has it in an interview too, where he talks to, where he's outlining it from 12 Rules, right?
Yeah.
And he's describing it. And that like watching them shows us that this difficult task, difficult to overcome, difficult trick to learn or whatever it is, which it has punishing consequences every time they fail, creates/teaches a type of resilience that doesn't occur just by sort of going through the motions every day.
If I remember right from 12 Rules, his big point in there is that the self-directed nature specifically of learning a new skateboard trick likely produces in those kids that are learning that something that even sort of participating in like a basketball or a baseball practice that has a coach telling you to do X, Y, or Z doesn't do, because it's one, it's so repetitive. And if you've ever, you know, tried to learn a new skateboard trick, that can be some of the most repetitive, athletic motions that you'll ever try. I mean, if you've ever watched or yourself tried to learn to ollie, you know, you probably attempt an ollie, unless you're just like sickly
naturally
talented, hundreds of times before you stick even the littlest ollie. And then beyond that, trying to get that higher and higher and higher and higher and higher so that you can develop other tricks off of that. And there's nobody telling you to do that. And there's no benefit to it. Like, you're not going to win the baseball game because you learned how to ollie. You just learned how to do something that you couldn't do, you know, 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, an hour ago, 2 days ago, whatever, by this repetitive and often punishing motion. The board flicks up and hits you in the shins. It flips over and you land on the trucks weird and twist an ankle, you know, whatever. So I like that. I mean, I think there's something to that. I hate to keep bringing up sort of the dangerous side of this, but I think that all of this, when you have these discussions, can lead you down the path of a weird self-righteousness. If the focus of doing hard things is for the sake of being able to say I do hard things.
Yeah. I was going to say with like this level of failure and repeat, or even you know, so like in a lot of physical hard things, it's about continuing even though something is either painful or long-term really uncomfortable, right? And learning how to continue, maybe mentally uncomfortable or difficult. Same with things like, you know, maybe tackling a book or a class or something that you didn't think you were going to be able to do, the mental challenge to continue, even if you fail a test, not drop that class or something like that. It's in part seems like preparation, and we can lean this towards the neighbor thing because, sometimes life is just going to be hard things that you did not get to choose to do, right? Like life throws, living in a sinful world means that sometimes things are hard purely because the world is sinful and harm is going to happen to you, your family.
Well, as Paul's dying, his phrase that we now repeat is I've run the race, I have fought the good fight, right? That his comparisons are two things that are difficult to do. So hey, you want to have really your mind blown stuff I think about when I'm like really focused on hard stuff? So follow me here. Sometimes you get into a pattern of doing hard things, like you're trying to get in shape, you're trying to train for a 100-mile mountain bike ride, or you're really into pinning this person at your jujitsu dojo that you've never been able to pin before. I don't do jujitsu. You help me out. Did I do that right?
Submitting. We don't pin. We choke or break until they snap. You know.
Submitting somebody at your dojo that you've never submitted before. All right.
Theology of submission.
But do you ever notice how like that stuff is really hard? But you get to the point, you could even say this to some degree, like finishing a master's degree or a PhD or, you know, translating something or writing a book or whatever. That when you focus on doing something that's really hard and you start to like get better at it, it doesn't make it less hard every time you do it. It doesn't even make it less painful every time you do it. Sometimes, like, training for a bike race, one of the things that you find is that the better you get, the faster you get, the harder you work, and it's not less painful than when you were just sort of hopping on the bike for the first time because you keep looking for these improvements and you keep the pain level about the same, but you start to look forward to that pain and you start to get, like, some... I'm sure it's endorphins or something like that, but you start to get just like this
some reward from
reward for it, and you look forward to it, and you seek ways to work hard like that and find that pain again. This has happened to me. Even I remember with this specifically when I was at the university, when you've like taken on a big challenge to start a new big sort of project, and it takes you work, and you have to get people on your side and the whole nine yards, and it's hard, but you end up looking forward to it, and it's even painful at times, but you end up looking forward to that pain. My head always goes to, all right, so in heaven / in glory, in the new heaven and new earth, like, are we going to be so bored because there's not this pain to fight for anymore and to work for? Like, is working hard, because we derive value out of that on the inside, right? If you look at the lives when you're part of your life, when you're like a sloth, and then part of your life when you're not, and you're kind of really working hard at something, you don't look back at the times when you're a sloth and be like, I really want to hit that again. You look at the times when you're working really hard and like, oh yeah, I remember this. This is great. I want to do this. You even tell yourself, oh, I want to keep this up. I don't want to let that happen again. Da, 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 da. what's it going to be like in glory when you just like have this perfect body, you know, everything's dandy all the time and there's nothing really to fight hard for and work for. This is where my brain goes with this kind of stuff. I think it's going to be, to me, that's a real trip. That really trips my brain out a little bit. Sorry.
Yeah, that's
no one else thinks about that stuff.
I do think about that stuff. I try not to think about it because I just think we understand so little about.
Me too. That's where I end up with it.
I always go like this. I always figure that to some level, our entire experience of this world is tainted by sin, right?
But on some level,
shadowed, and in other levels, like we were created as embodied creatures before sin came.
Right. With work and assigned work.
And with an assigned work. And
like I'm going to say it. I want a job in heaven. I want a job. I want some responsibility.
You know what's funny is like...
I don't do well without these things here, and so I can't imagine doing well without them there.
One of the last things, the last time I saw Ron Hodel before he died, he said was that he was talking about jobs in heaven. People having jobs in heaven.
That's great.
And he said he doesn't know. He thinks that he gets to just vacation because his job, a pastor, will no longer be needed in heaven. He'll have I'll have one of the only jobs that's not needed in heaven. So he's like, I'll get reassigned. I get to be a boat captain.
Yeah.
Or something
that's
like
cool.
that. Yeah.
So, but Adam, think about it. Like you've been into, so you got into jiu-jitsu when you lived in San Juan. Mm-hmm. So that was a while ago now. So you've been on the jiu-jitsu train for like, got to be going close to 10 years now.
No. Oh, I wish.
Six or seven.
I'm still getting crushed. But yeah, 5 years.
I mean, what if it is 10 years still getting crushed? What does that say about you?
Well, I mean, that's the reality of it, being an older guy in the gym. Like this morning, I was going with this 19-year-old kid, and I'm like, how tough can he be? And he's just like, throws me on the mat and he's like on top of me trying to choke me. I'm like, whoa.
Cool.
I did sneak
out, bro.
So I did the hard thing, which was not to try to muscle him because he was, you know, he's 30. Oh my gosh, almost 30 years younger than me. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do the hard thing and resist trying to fight back like strength for strength. And I'm just going to use technique. And I reached up, did a little what they call a baseball bat choke and heard him go, you know, choking. And I thought this was very rewarding.
Okay, what if you don't get to do jiu-jitsu in heaven?
Well, that's fine.
About that?
I mean, I think you and I, Scott, maybe we'll invite Caleb. We'll see. We'll be sitting at a bar smoking. Well, I don't know if he smokes cigars, but he'll be smoking a pipe, Frog Morton or whatever you like to
use. I do like Frog Morton, yeah.
I think there will be something to do because commands, and this is speculative, but the certain commands to Adam and Eve, subdue the earth.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely there were definitely jobs in the garden.
What, you know?
I know the answers. I'm just saying this is where my brain goes. So, when we have a conversation about doing hard things, because I think it's important. It's important for the here and now. It gives us purpose, gives us drive. I think that you look at this idea that, in some ways it's just training yourself for the fact that the sinful world is hard to live in as a Christian, and the devil of the world in your own sinful flesh is constantly trying to rip your faith away.
I mean, the Bible talks about it as warfare.
Yeah. And so acculturating yourself to hard is, you know, part of the Christian life.
It's probably good when things get really hard and not manufactured hard.
I even think that as an American where life is pretty easy, acculturating yourself too hard is not a bad idea for if things really do get harder to be a Christian.
Yeah. I mean, I think if we go back to our original question, why do hard things? It's sort of like that old military saying, you've probably heard it, the more you sweat in peace, the less you're going to bleed in war. You know, you get accustomed to the, what we used to call the suck. You embrace the suck. Now, you were talking about what's it going to be like in heaven. I have no idea. I just know it would be awesome. But you know the movie Gladiator with, I think it's Russell Crowe?
Yeah.
The beginning scene where he's walking in the field, his hands are just sort of like grazing
over
the grain.
Over the grain, yeah.
And his wife and child are running towards him or something like that. And so I said to my father-in-law, you know, they got this big property up in Michigan. I was like, that's all I want to do is be able to walk in your back field and feel the grain. He goes, no, you got to wait till heaven for that. And so, but like, how did he get the grain? You know, how did he, you know, having kids and stuff is hard, but it's because it is subjective. You know, the reference is, reference point is different. You know, our our bodies won't get tired. Our you'll even you, Scott, will have the perfect body.
I know, even me.
Without having to bike and ride and or swim and what are all those other
where the challenge of hard things to the Christian comes in is part of this. Part of your worry is actually something the gospel is taking from you away from you, which is that your self-worth is earned here.
That's right.
And so your the anxiety about heaven or whatever has to do with how much of your self-worth is earned here and now, and that Christ actually takes that away from you. And so,
yeah, that's the thing about it, right? Is that it, this fights the gospel. Everything in me fights against the gospel,
right?
Everything in me tells me that my only value is the fact that I can persevere, that I can work, and that I can even serve others in my working, that that's where my value is, rather than seeing that as the through the way of the gospel, which is my worth is in Christ. And as is everyone else's, right? And then even doing hard things, you know, waking up at 4:30 for the purpose of serving your neighbors and your family and everything, those are all great, but my worth and my value isn't in that. That's where I become a little Christ to those other people.
And hard things might exist in heaven, but the reason you can't, you struggle, we struggle to envision them is because they won't exist for the purpose of making you you.
That's right.
Anymore.
Yeah.
And that's impossible. That's very difficult to. That's like the one thing that this sinful world really has a hard, hard time with is, you without sin is very difficult.
And it is hard that we just, like Adam said, that we don't know much other than that it'll be
good.
Good, wonderful.
Yeah.
So
I like details.
You could probably nap when you want. You
know? I do like that.
You could probably nap when you want. Yeah, that's good. I mean. Yeah. I love that the idea of it is about like both quantity and quality, right? Like the feast, the heavenly feast is like
never ending and never ending
and good, yes. Right? Like a never ending feast here would be torture. Like think about like just wanting a party to be over. Like you go to a party and first seeing everybody
like
is good.
10 minutes after I get there,
I'm like 10 minutes in. I'm like, how do I sneak out of here?
Well, there's definitely something.
Can I ask? Can we go back to the very beginning? And I can't remember who said it, but it made me think. Somebody said something. I think it was Scott. I think you said something about working, working towards your righteousness or something. How do we view all of this talk in light of like the two kinds of righteousness? Because I think that's kind of helpful in thinking about the question, why do hard things? Because there is a righteousness that has nothing to do at all with our righteousness before God, by grace through faith on account of Christ. But there is a righteousness, a goodness, or however you want to put it, that we pursue coram hominibus, you know, before man, right? And is doing hard things kind of part of that? You know, being a better, you know, striving to be a better, and I'm using air quotes here for the listeners, a better person or a person who's, like Jordan Peterson, we mentioned him a couple times. He one of his rules is something like be the type of person that people look to when you're planning your father's funeral or something along those lines.
Yeah.
You know, is that in a way kind of striving for the civil left-hand kingdom, horizontal righteousness, if, does that make sense?
I do know it does. I've always thought that two kinds of righteousness is more potentially helpful than it is sometimes helpful. And the reason for that is because of the word righteousness.
That makes sense.
You know, I almost feel like there, and it's not that there isn't a civil righteousness, and it isn't that we shouldn't strive to be civilly righteous. We should, or before men, we should. And I think to some...
Except that changes. I mean, that one of the problems is, I think with Luther, part of the two kinds of righteousness is a righteousness before your prince. So it's legal, right? It's like you can be certain behaviors are going to be punished and certain ones are going to be praised. But righteousness before men or what's considered good rapidly changes. Our culture, sure. You know, what does the current culture believe like good behavior, words, ethics, and actions are versus what we've talked about as sort of objective good and stuff like that, right? That would be difficult to say. Like,
well, I think don't take the before men too far, because yeah. I think that if the before men is just a subjective decision of those men to whom it's before, you're right. That is always changing. The standard doesn't change, and if you just take the Decalogue as the standard, right, that doesn't change. And you're living that out civilly before men, and that has nothing to do with your righteousness before God. Again, that can be, you know, your righteousness before God is solidified on account of Christ alone by grace through faith, right? That is objectively the truth. Where I just feel like if there were a way to phrase it where you could take out the righteousness, yeah. I would really like it, because I think people are always going to hear righteousness and they're not just going to think of it before men, but they're going to think that translates to before God and it's going to interfere with Christ.
Yeah. We had time. That's why I asked the question and it kind of came up early on. I always wonder about that. And I think that's actually very helpful in the potential for the two kinds of righteousness has more,
I think it's potentially very helpful, but you have to be clear that no matter what your sort of sinful heart and mind lean into when you're talking about that righteousness before men, that this has nothing to do with your salvation. It has nothing to do with your justification. Yeah. And this has nothing to do with how God sees you, because you're completely out of luck unless God sees you through the lens of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Yeah. The end.
No matter how
civilly righteous you are.
It's also why, say, like, better person is too big of an umbrella for stuff like doing hard things, where I think it'd be better to get into some of this, quote, nitty-gritty of better. Like, maybe it means more resilient person. Maybe it means quicker mm-hmm. to act. Maybe it means, you know, less self-centered. Willing to serve others, maybe, but those are individually descriptive, are better in a vocational and a personal and a one-on-one sense in the people who need you or the society or community who needs you or whatever, than just saying better person.
Well, I think, Adam, I would more lean into the three estates, because especially if you're talking about in the context of living and doing hard things, right, which if we do this correctly, it's always going to come back to vocational, right? That there's no reason to press after any of this if it's not vocationally centered in some way, shape, or form. And within the three estates, you know, and help me if I mess these up, so you're going to have your estate within your family, the state within sort of civil society, and your estate within the church, right? Mm-hmm. Think about what it means to live vocationally in those three estates. Even as Caleb was sort of saying with the civilly stuff in civil society, you don't have a lot of choice there, right? There are civil standards that are pressed on you by governments, and that if you don't live up to them, you're going to go to jail. Now, you can try to do better at them. You can try to be a good citizen to other people and all that around, and you should. And that's outwardly where your sort of righteousness before men will come up. But what does it mean to live within those vocationally? It means that in the church, right, you're availing yourself vocationally. You're doing, and you could say it this way, and I'm going to put a doing to it, and people can leave the comments. You're doing the hard thing of availing yourself of word and sacrament as often as you possibly can. Because every time you leave that place on Sunday, the devil, the world, and your own sinful flesh are going to be warring against you to break your faith. And the only power, as Luther says in the Large Catechism, the only power that you have to fight against that is the power of God's word of faith, period, the end. Where do you avail yourself of that word of faith? In church on Sunday morning when the preacher preaches the gospel into your ears and puts the body and blood of Christ into your mouth. Right. That's how. Now, that's a hard thing to do. That thing doesn't earn you your salvation. Your salvation is on account of Christ alone, and the means of grace is what connects you to Christ by faith. You know, you're not doing it, but you've got to be there.
And if history's shown anything, it's a hard thing for people, for sinners, to maintain without interjecting and trying to mess up and change something about it to make it more convenient.
You have to be a good citizen, or otherwise you're going to be punished. But it's still hard. It's hard not to. You live in a country with, you know, probably literally millions of laws. Hard not to break one of them, but you still have to do the hard thing of trying. The one that's interesting to me is within sort of the state of your family, because that's the one where it's very common these days, especially in my experience, for just it not to matter that much.
To export the hard things.
To export them. Or to never engage in them at all because they are hard. To never have that family at all because it's a hard thing to do and it takes away from focusing on yourself. And so I think you can think two kinds of righteousness in that way, as in the necessity to live your life vocationally, as hard as that is, within the three estates, and know that you're called to all three of those estates and that there is a particular vocation within those. When I used to teach this at the university, I said there's the vocation of being a Christian, and then there's Christian vocation, right? Vocation of being a Christian means you avail yourself of the word and sacraments as often as possible.
I think
Christian vocation are those things that you're called to serve other people.
Yeah, I really think you are onto something here with this three states, because living in each of those states is just difficult. On a recent Outlaw God, Paulson was talking about conflict in the church, and
we were talking about it this morning.
He just said, you know, it's like if you have a church, if you've ever attended a church without conflict in it, I'd be really very interested to send me the name of that church, right? It's going to be difficult to go to a church consistently to live with those other people.
Or as Neskin used to say, there's a sure place to find sinners, it's in church on Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's right. That's a difficult estate to do it. I mean, self-admitted by most families and by most people who consider maybe taking on or having a family of their own someday, that is very difficult. And like you said, we talked about on an earlier episode about people putting that off almost indefinitely because it will be difficult.
Mm-hmm. It's hard.
And living civilly is obviously, I mean, we hear more about civil unrest and division than ever before for people my age, at least. I would guess for you guys too, I don't know. It's daily, right? It's minute by minute. You can find some sort of unrest. It is hard to live amongst other people inside of a nation. It's just very difficult to be located and do this. Even if you have a cushy sort of life by difficulty of having your basic necessities met sort of metric, it is difficult to live with other people. And so, doing hard things is a necessity of life. And if you kind of quit doing those,
I think one of the, if you don't, you're tearing yourself out of some one or several of the estates and or the vocations that God has called you to within them.
Right. Oh. Right. Yeah. Well, that's very good. Did we hit time with that?
You're good.
We basically did. Wow.
Hooray. That's the next, I think it'd be a New York, not really a New York Times bestseller, but to do a two kinds of righteousness, but to really work on that horizontal part of it with the different name. You know,
yeah. Well, it wouldn't be as flashy as like two kinds of righteousness or 2KR if you did that. That's the problem. Yeah. I mean, you lose some of the flash. But again, I don't want to like get the two kinds of righteousness people like hurrying in us. I think it's potentially very helpful. I just think if you're teaching it, you have to just continually remind people that this righteousness of which we speak that's before men, you know, no matter how good you end up thinking it is not earning you salvation. It's not earning you merit with God.
Yeah, I think the thing that sometimes gets lacked is seeing civil righteousness under the guidance of the first use of the law, and thus also seeing the first use of the law as condemning in that case. of civil righteousness as well, right? And the
yeah.
and the physical and legal limitations on a
I think
on a
you
person.
Have to realize that we're sinners, and that anytime you tell somebody that they've achieved any kind of righteousness, they're going to connect it to how God sees them
yeah.
in
yeah.
their mind. So they have to be preached to.
Probably because
that this is not the case.
Well,
and
yeah,
they need to be properly catechized in the two kinds of righteousness. You know what yeah. that other kind is, yeah. right?
Yeah. Yep. And distinguishing that God doesn't see you as you see you, which is like when you're achieving in the civil realm, you see you very in a very good light.
But God does too if you're in Christ, because He sees Christ. And He all of those sick motivations and those sin-filled actions that nobody saw, even in your righteousness, that He does see. He filters through the lens of Christ, and He still says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." The reality is that before God, though, this is because of Christ. Period. The end. Before men, this is another story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, word.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinking Fellows podcast. If you found this conversation interesting or helpful, we could use your support to keep this podcast network going. You go to 1517.org/donate to support this show in the efforts of 1517. Another way that you can help us is by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. There's links in the show notes to both of those things. Thank you for listening. We will catch you next time. Bye.